us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
We draw your attention to verses 54 and 55 of chapter Araf from the Holy Quran, recited by Mr. Ali Asghar Burumand.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Inna رَبَّكُمُ اللَّهُ الَّذِي خَلَقَ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضَ فِي سِتَّةِ أَيَّامٍ خَلَقَ السماوات والأرض في ستة أيام ثم استوى على العرش ثم استوى على العرش الليل النهار يطلبه حثيثا والشمس والقمر والنجوم مسخرات ألا له الخلق والأمر تبارك الله رب العالمين ادعوا ربكم تضرعا ادعوا ربكم تضرعا وخفية صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Surely, your Lord is Allah, who created the heavens and the earth in six periods of time, and He is firm in power. He throws the veil of night over the day, which it pursues incessantly, and He created the sun and the moon and the stars, made subservient by His command. Surely, His is the creation and the command. Blessed is Allah, the Lord of the worlds. Call on your Lord humbly and secretly. Surely, He does not love those who exceed the limits.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
This hour's top stories: the UN chief warns against what he calls COVID-19 vaccine nationalism and hoarding by the world's wealthier nations. A new report shows a 33% rise in homicides in major U.S. cities last year, a crime surge that has shown no sign of letting up this year. Also in the headlines, the death toll from floods and landslides in eastern Indonesia and neighboring East Timor rises to above 70, with dozens more still missing. And those were the top stories. Welcome. The UN Secretary General has expressed concern over what he called COVID-19 vaccine nationalism and hoarding by the world's wealthier nations. In a tweet, Antonio Guterres noted that vaccines must be made available and accessible to everyone as soon as possible. So far, nearly 650 million doses of the COVID-19 vaccine have been administered to people around the world. The world's richer nations, however, account for the majority of the figure. Over 131 million people have contracted the respiratory disease globally, more than 2.8 million of whom have lost their lives. The UN has pledged to push for affordable vaccines for everyone to rapidly accelerate recovery and strengthen the global economy. Political commentator Eric Wahlberg says the coronavirus pandemic has been a lesson to the world that its treatment cannot be politicized and used as a private property.
Really, COVID is a lesson that you can't play private property tricks and hoarding, and that kind of economics is not capable of solving this problem. And the WHO has a very good a program, COVAX, to 170 nations are signed up, pledging to distribute it equally and without hoarding. So, and of course, with Trump gone, the U.S. will hopefully just be a part of that. It's not yet part of this. The U.K. is, and other European countries in Latin America and Southeast Asia, but the U.S. has got to be in.
The coronavirus pandemic continues to take its toll on Latin America as the region is reeling from the deadly disease. Brazil registered some 1,200 new deaths from the virus, bringing the total fatalities to more than 331,000. The country also reported over 31,000 new cases. The overall infections now hover around 13 million. Brazil is the second worst hit nation in the world after the U.S. In Mexico, the health ministry announced over 1,200 new confirmed cases, taking the total infections to over 2,250,000. 136 new deaths were also reported. The overall fatalities have surpassed 204,000. This comes as separate data published recently by the health ministry suggests that the actual death toll from the coronavirus may be at least 60% above the confirmed figure. India has recorded more than 100,000 new coronavirus cases in a single day, a record rise since the outbreak of the disease in the country. India's total caseload is now nearing 13 million, the highest after the U.S. and Brazil. The health ministry says 478 people also succumbed to the disease in the past 24 hours, raising the death tally to over 165,000. The country's daily infections have leapt about 12-fold since hitting a multi-month low this February when authorities eased most restrictions. Nearly half of the new infections are reported in India's richest state of Maharashtra. The state has announced shutting shopping malls, cinemas, restaurants, and places of worship from Monday evening. Authorities will also impose a complete lockdown at weekends amid a shortage of hospital beds. A new report suggests there was a 33% rise in homicides in major U.S. cities last year amid then-prevailing anger over racial injustice and police brutality across the country. The report produced by the Major Cities Chiefs Association includes homicide, rape, robbery, and aggravated assault. It says 63 of the 66 largest police jurisdictions saw increases in at least one category of violent crimes. The increase in homicide rates is both historic and far-reaching. The report also suggests that the crime surge has continued into the first quarter of the year. In Chicago and New York City, homicides and shootings are up between 30 and 50% in the first 3 months of the year compared to 2020. Experts say factors such as economic collapse, social anxiety, and calls for depolicing could have contributed to the spike in homicides. Now, the first week of the trial of former white American police officer Derek Chauvin has ended. He's charged with killing unarmed African-American George Floyd in the city of Minneapolis last year. Different witnesses, from senior officers to paramedics and family members, have shared their testimonies in a series of emotional sessions.
The murder trial of Derek Chauvin, a former American cop who knelt on the neck of an unarmed black man for about 9 minutes in Minneapolis last May. Chauvin is charged with the death of that arrested man, George Floyd. The first week of the trial was marked by dramatic and emotional accounts. An eyewitness broke down in tears while responding to prosecutors.
I heard him keep trying to ask them to let him up so he can't breathe. And even I said to the officer, I said, man, he said he can't breathe. And man, he said, well, if he keep talking, he can breathe.
Floyd's partner of nearly 3 years also got very emotional while testifying. One of the key moments of the trial was on the fifth day of the proceedings. That's when a senior homicide investigator called Chauvin's use of force on Floyd totally unnecessary.
First of all, pulling him down to the ground face down and putting your knee on the neck for that amount of time is just uncalled for.
What level of force might that be?
That would be the top tier. The deadly force.
Why?
Because of the fact that if your knee is on a person's neck, that can kill him.
Many Americans also say Floyd's death has had profound emotional and psychological consequences for them.
It's very traumatic for a black person to follow a trial of a black person who was innocently murdered.
I think it's opened a lot of people's minds to be on the lookout for discrimination.
And so I think that a lot of people, or maybe of my color, have been suffering from that sort of PTSD and trauma.
We also have to have that conversation of what is the role of the police.
One can say that what unites all these people is the trauma of watching the death of a black man under the knee of a white police officer. Chauvin has pleaded not guilty to the charges against him. His lawyers argue that Floyd died due to drug overdose. Thus, while medical examiners have said his death was homicide at the hands of police. The case of George Floyd is undoubtedly a clear example of police injustice and brutality in the United States. His death has already become a symbol of a rallying cry for a global movement against systemic racism and discrimination. But how many other victims are needed for U.S. police to stop abusing their power, especially against minorities in a country known for its racial diversity?
A group of young activists have made their way from Detroit, Michigan to the U.S. Capitol and are on hunger strike. They say they are standing in solidarity with millions of Yemenis suffering as Saudi Arabia blocks supplies from entering the country. Wyatt Reed is in Washington, D.C.
Going without food may seem extreme to some, but for many Yemenis, it's a part of daily life. After Saudi Arabia began its war on Yemen in 2015, it quickly moved to encircle the nation, and huge swaths of the country have been facing chronic malnutrition ever since. Now, supporters abroad are refusing food as well in an effort to draw attention to Yemeni's desperate plight.
We're here outside the White House, where activists with the Yemeni Liberation Movement have gathered to call for an end to U.S. support for the Saudi-led siege on Yemen. Many of them have decided to put their bodies on the line and are now on day 6 of an ongoing hunger strike in solidarity with the Yemeni people starving under the blockade.
We're here at Washington, D.C. We came all the way from Michigan, and we're in Washington, D.C. to demand an end for the U.S. For the U.S.'s support on the Saudi-led blockade on Yemen, which is causing the biggest humanitarian crisis in the last 100 years. Over 22 million people are experiencing starvation, and every 75 seconds a child dies from starvation.
For the millions deprived of basic supplies like medicine and fuel, every day is a struggle for survival. According to UNICEF, over two-thirds of Yemen's population, or more than 20 million people, are in need of humanitarian aid. Meanwhile, activists say the U.S. government has been working continuously to enable the Saudi aggression.
So the United States is not only complicit in this genocide, they are wholeheartedly and completely supporting it at every possible aspect, militarily, with intelligence and logistics. They have provided billions, hundreds of billions of dollars in weapon sales to the Saudi government, as well as helping the Saudi government enforce the fuel blockade, which is currently enforced since December 2020.
It's been nearly a week since they've eaten, and going without food is starting to take a toll. But these activists are determined to carry on, saying the situation in Yemen has gotten so bad that they simply have no other choice.
Because it gets pretty foggy and hazy. And I think we're also realizing this is only a fraction of what Yemeni people are having to deal with. So we want folks at home to really understand that.
And I just want to add, you know, so many folks say, like, why are y'all starving yourselves? You know, like, you should be doing something else. And really, it's a last resort. If you look at hunger strikes from, you know, the Irish hunger strike or prison hunger strikes, these are people whose power was taken away, and this is a last resort.
Wyatt Reed, Washington.
A rights group says Israel has arrested 230 Palestinian children since the beginning of 2021. A recently published report by the Palestinian Prisoners Society says most of the arrests were made in occupied Jerusalem al-Quds. It says the imprisoned children are kept behind bars under harsh conditions, including being denied food or drink for long hours. The report says the detained children are also subject to various forms of abuse. The detained minors are often released either on bail or by transferring to house arrest. The report, however, does not elaborate on the number of children who were released. Official Palestinian data says around 44,000 Palestinians, including hundreds of women and children, are currently held in Israeli detention facilities. More than 70 people have died after flash floods and landslides hit Indonesia and neighboring East Timor. 55 fatalities were reported in Indonesia, while 21 lost their lives in East Timor. Rescue teams are working to save the trapped survivors as dozens are still missing. Torrential rain caused destruction and forced thousands of people to flee to shelters. Floodwater from overflowing dams has submerged thousands of homes. Officials have warned that the death toll could rise. Flash floods, I should say, and fatal landslides are common across the Indonesian archipelago during the rainy season. Street protests have erupted again in Indian-administered Kashmir after a rather long hiatus. The region was gripped by a security crackdown after August 2019 when India stripped Kashmir of its autonomy. Now violence has reared its ugly head again. Shahanabad reports.
After a lull of around 20 months, street protests against Indian rule resurfaced in Indian-controlled Kashmir. That came after three suspected anti-India fighters were killed by government forces in an anti-militancy operation on Friday in the southern district of Pulwama. Officials say two of the three men were involved in killing a policeman guarding a local politician's house. Like in past, hundreds of people marched towards the site of the gun battle in support of the fighters. They chanted slogans against the Indian rule in the region. Government forces used tear gas and fired shotgun pellets at the stone-throwing protesters, injuring four people. India imposed a security crackdown on Kashmir after August 5, 2019, when it unilaterally stripped the region of its autonomy. The crackdown, coupled with the COVID-19 lockdown, kept people from taking to streets. Indian officials called the Kashmir unrest, quote, Pakistan-sponsored terrorism, a charge that Islamabad denies.
Pakistan.
Through social media, Pakistan is instigating, encouraging, and radicalizing the youth of Kashmir to join terrorist outfits. The youth are fearless and innocent. They don't know what they are doing. Whoever chooses this path should remember the outcome is either jail or death.
A senior journalist and political analyst from Kashmir says there is pent-up anger among people, and this is going to be critical this summer.
A series of laws that have come, including other things which are happening at such a galloping pace. So now people are really trying to express their anger, through one way or the other. You saw the protests in Jamia Masjid, the clashes there. You saw, government degree college in two South Kashmir districts. So I think this summer is going to be very tricky.
Last month, India and Pakistan agreed to abide by their 2003 ceasefire agreement along the de facto borders dividing Kashmir. However, the crackdown by security forces and attacks by militants continue unabated. Kashmir has been a bone of contention between India and Pakistan since their independence from the British rule in 1947. The two countries have fought wars over the region and claim sovereignty over it. After witnessing decades of violence, people in Kashmir aim to see a peaceful future. Majority of people living here believe global powers need to play their part before the animosity between India and Pakistan claims more lives here. Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
The European Union's foreign policy chief has pledged the bloc's unwavering support for Ukraine amid the recent escalation between Kyiv and Moscow. Josep Borrell also expressed grave concern of a Russian troop movement around Ukraine. He spoke after a phone call with the Ukrainian foreign minister. Tensions have recently risen between Russia and Ukraine. Kyiv has accused the Kremlin of massing thousands of military personnel on its northern and eastern borders, as well as on the Crimean Peninsula. Russia says the buildup is not threatening anyone. This follows a recent rise in armed clashes in eastern Ukraine between the country's troops and pro-Russian forces. Independent analyst Max Perry believes Russia's military buildup near Ukraine's border is a response to Kyiv's saber-rattling.
This buildup of Russian troops is actually, to the contrary, it is in response to saber-rattling by Ukraine that is being instigated by the United States and in the form of NATO, and now Ukraine and NATO are holding joint military drills on Russia's border, the Ukrainian armed forces. And, this is risking escalating a potential conflict which could have catastrophic consequences globally and threatens to draw in many global players.
Northern Ireland police say more than a dozen officers have been injured in clashes with unionist protesters in the capital, Belfast. Police say the protesters hurled petrol bombs and other objects during the Saturday clashes. They say 8 people have been arrested, 3 of them teenagers. Many pro-British unionists oppose the new trade barriers introduced between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK. Barriers are linked to Britain's exit from the EU. They prevent a hard border between Northern Ireland and EU member Ireland. Pro-British unionists in Northern Ireland say the barriers will strain the region's ties with the rest of the UK. Exit polls in Bulgaria's parliamentary election show that Prime Minister Boyko Borisov's party has come first with 25% of the vote. Exit polls also confirm a surge for anti-government protest parties. Borisov, who's been in power for almost a decade now, may face weeks of talks to form a coalition. Another election cannot be ruled out for one of the poorest European Union members. Borisov's center-right GERB party won over a third of the votes 4 years ago, but the government has faced a series of scandals, the protests last year accusing the government of protecting oligarchs. Many thanks for staying tuned. Have a good day.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en. Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrors fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among Thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him. I ask thee, O he who owns all objects of need, which are granted by his will and hastened to his desire, that thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that thou willst, and givest me mercy from thee. Forgiveness decreases thee not, and giving injuries thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from thee: the facility to obey thee at its beginning, and the favor of thy forgiveness at its end. O he who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
In the limelight.
Work crews were pumping millions of gallons of contaminated wastewater into an ecologically sensitive Florida bay on Sunday, 4th of April, as they tried to prevent the imminent collapse of a storage reservoir at an old phosphate mine. Officials in Manatee County, Florida, extended an evacuation zone overnight and warned that up to 340 million gallons could engulf the area in a 20-foot wall of water if they could not repair the breach at the Piney Point Reservoir in the Tampa Bay area of Florida, north of Bradenton. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist Richard Luscombe, with the Associated Press contributing. The piece is titled, "Florida Faces Imminent Pollution Catastrophe from Phosphate Mine Pond." Stay with us for more of Richard Luscombe's article. Work crews were pumping millions of gallons of contaminated wastewater into an ecologically sensitive Florida bay on Sunday, 4th of April, as they tried to prevent the imminent collapse of a storage reservoir at an old phosphate mine, the old Piney Point phosphate mine in Bradenton, Florida. Officials in Manatee County extended an evacuation zone overnight and warned that up to 340 million gallons of contaminated water could engulf the area in a 20-foot wall of water if they could not repair the breach at the Piney Point Reservoir in the Tampa Bay area, north of Bradenton, Florida. Aerial images aired on local television showed water pouring from leaks in the walls of the retention pond. Ron DeSantis, the Florida governor, declared a state of emergency after officials warned of the imminent collapse of the pond. He toured the scene by helicopter on Sunday and said at a press conference engineers were still attempting to plug breaches in the reservoir wall with rocks and other materials, and that other mitigation efforts included the controlled release of 35 million gallons daily at Port Manatee. He said the state's Department of Environmental Protection, DEP, had brought in 20 new pumps. "What we're looking at now is trying to prevent and respond to, if need be, a real catastrophic flood situation," Ron DeSantis said. He added, The water quality issues that are flowing from this for us is less than the risk of everyone's health and safety, particularly folks who may live in the area. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis also attempted to downplay reports that the water contained traces of radioactive materials. The water was tested prior to discharge, and the primary concern is nutrients, Ron DeSantis said. He added, the water meets water quality standards for marine waters, with the exception primarily of the phosphorus and the nitrogen. Scott Hopes, the acting county administrator, warned that despite a low population density, the nearby area could be overwhelmed by a sudden collapse of the 77-acre pond, even though discharges had lessened the quantity of remaining water. What if we should have a full breach? We're down to about 340 million gallons that could breach in totality in a period of minutes. And the models for less than an hour are as high as a 20-foot wall of water. So if you're in an evacuation area and you have not heeded that, you need to think twice and follow the orders. Officials widened the evacuation zone late on Saturday, 3rd of April, from a dozen or so properties to more than 300 houses. The Tampa Bay Times interviewed some residents of the area who were refusing to leave. A local jail just a mile away from the leaky pond was not being evacuated, but officials were moving people and staff to the second story and putting sandbags on the ground floor. Hope said models showed the area could be covered with between 1 foot and 5 feet of water, and the second floor is 10 feet above the ground. County officials said well water remained unaffected, and there was no threat to Lake Manatee, the area's primary source of drinking water. The pond at the abandoned phosphate mine at Piney Point in Bradenton, Florida, sits in a stack of phosphogypsum, a radioactive waste product from fertilizer manufacturing. The pond contains small amounts of naturally occurring radium and uranium. The stacks can also release large concentrations of radon gas, a radioactive gas. Nikki Fry, the Florida Agriculture Commissioner and the only elected Democrat in statewide office, warned of an environmental catastrophe and called on Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who described the toxic water as mixed salt water, in a tweet announcing the state of emergency, to hold an emergency cabinet meeting. Floridans were evacuated from their homes on Easter weekend. 480 million gallons of toxic wastewater could end up in Tampa Bay. This might become an environmental catastrophe, Nikki Fry said on Twitter. Environmental protection groups warned that more pollutants in Tampa Bay would heighten the risk to wildlife from toxic red tide algae blooms. Phosphate companies have had over 50 years to figure out a way to dispose of the radioactive gypsum waste, the activist group Minnesota 88 said. At the present time, there are no federal, state, or local regulations requiring the industry to make final disposition of phosphogypsum waste in an environmentally acceptable manner. In a statement, the group, Minnesota 88, added, "The current crisis can be traced back to the absurd 2006 decision to allow dredge material from Port Manatee to be placed into one of the gypsum stacks at Piney Point, something the stack was never designed for and should have never been allowed." At the Sunday press conference, Scott Hopes, the county administrator, said The long-term objective would be to entirely pump out the three reservoirs on the site and fill them in. Later in the day, he said the amount of water left in the reservoir was now below 300 million gallons. The county commission said it was more comfortable than it had been, though a catastrophic collapse was still a possibility. Scott Hopes, the county administrator, also said this could have been resolved over two decades ago. The owner of Piney Point, HRK Holdings, bought the site after it was abandoned by Mulberry Corporation, which operated the phosphate plant for more than 40 years. As long ago as 2003, the Sarasota Herald Tribune reported reservoir walls were crumbling. The Federal Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, previously authorized the dumping of hundreds of millions of gallons of toxic water into the Gulf of Mexico. At a meeting of the Manatee Commission on Thursday, called after the seriousness of the new leak became apparent, engineers pointed to the deterioration of the pond's decades-old plastic liner. The condition of the plastic liner is not particularly great, Mike Kelly, an engineer commissioned by HIK Holdings, told the meeting. The Times reported, "It's old, there were some installation issues, there's a long-documented history of that liner system having issues." The newspaper inspected records and found that staff documented small holes or weaknesses in plastic seams above the waterline back in July, October, and December of 2020. On Sunday, Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis said HIK Holdings would be held accountable if a disaster occurs in Manatee County.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
Economic divide.
Hello and welcome to Economic Divide with me, Kavitha Hawaii. In this week's episode, we will look at the ailing EU economy
which the country's 27-member bloc are suffering some of the worst recessions ever due to the COVID-19 pandemic and its subsequent lockdowns. The actual recession warning was issued roughly back in May of 2020. Now it's almost a year later. How are the EU countries doing? Well, let's take a look at Italy, France, and Spain. In this case, the services sector. As you can see, it's being pummeled. These are some of the countries holding the highest debts in the EU. The Eurozone economy was already expected to contract during the first 3 months of 2021 for it to actually enter a double-dip recession. You may ask what a double-dip recession is. Here's an example of it. This particular one, you could see just the shape of the line. Now, double-dip recession is actually what happened in the U.S. between the years 1978 and 83. The economy recovered from a recession that peaked in the summer of 1980 to return to positive growth by the end of the year, as is seen towards the end there. But by Christmas of 1981, another deep recession had made its way. Now, if the outlook for the EU remains grim, which it does, then what is the EU going to do about it to make sure that member countries are going to weather economic downturns? This is while many EU countries are still in the midst of the pandemic and are experiencing a recession, countries like France, Germany, Italy, and Greece.
European stock markets sinking. Coronavirus to push the world into recession. Europe and EU countries, no exception.
Well, the first most important thing is to achieve herd immunity. This won't be done overnight. Obviously, a certain number of people have already been infected. We don't know how many people have been infected because so many people that are infected don't show symptoms. But we assume a certain percentage of the population has already been infected.
While infections leading to deaths and lockdowns replaced economic activity, the future looked bleak. Even when the vaccinations had been introduced, the EU was slow in its rollout, plagued by controversy with the UK over the availability.
Companies have to honor their contract to the European Union before they export to other regions in the world.
Giving herd immunity, obviously, is to distribute the vaccine. Now, that in itself is a huge, huge task. And it has been slow, certainly in certain countries more than others. But that is the fundamental way that we can get the economy moving again, is to get people vaccinated. Now,
Europe experienced the worst economic contraction since World War II, and maybe even worse, since 2021 future remained uncertain while the pandemic persisted. Meanwhile, the EU, after heated debates and discussions, came up with a rescue plan, over $2 trillion. A ghastly figure, which should be enough to cushion the blow, or will it?
And this, I think, is a remarkable moment of unity for the European Union. It resulted in, indeed, the recovery package and resilience package we have now, Next Generation EU, of an unprecedented magnitude. And now it's up to us to invest it in the right way and in a responsible way.
Stimulus would help in this current environment. And the main thing to focus on is making sure the businesses don't go out of business. The problem is when a business fails, and say a restaurant, once it fails, to get it going again requires investment. And in a situation where no one has got any money because it's been a difficult time for too long, there is very little money around to get businesses started again.
Joining me in the studio is Mick Wallace, member of the European Parliament. Mick Wallace is an Irish politician and former property developer who has been a member of the European Parliament from Ireland for the South constituency since July 2019. He's a member of Independence for Change. It's part of the European United Left Nordic Green Left. Mike Wallace, welcome. The EU, like other unions or countries, has been gripped in the throes of COVID-19 pandemic. Now, the economic decline or recession as a result has been one of the worst that's been recorded at 7% for the year 2020. And for the year 2021, some EU countries have gone into a double-dip recession. Now, what are the plans that the EU has to come out of this recession?
Yeah, well, I think what people outside of Europe need to understand, and inside Europe for that matter, is that the potential recession from the COVID crisis has a different impact on different people. The lockdown has been very selective. For example, in a country like Ireland, the small shops, the family-owned bars and restaurants are closed. But manufacturing industry, meat plants, processing plants, they're all open. Mines, they're all open. So in Ireland at the moment, you could go to work and work inside in a factory where there's 400 or 500 other people. And on your way home from work in the evening, you wouldn't be allowed to visit your friend. You don't have a cafe or a bar or a restaurant to go to. You're not allowed to play outdoor football. But you can work in a factory during the day inside or in a meat plant or a mine. Now, this is a bit ridiculous. But the truth be told is that the EU, and one of the reasons that we actually haven't got a measure on the pandemic is that we have been too inconsistent in how we've dealt with it. And that inconsistency will reflect.
Lots of interesting points Mick Wallace makes there. Well, let's take a look at what type of social media content is on this topic of the EU, which is pretty widespread in terms of what is happening. Taking a look at our first tweet, the spring 2020 EC forecast projects that the euro area economy will contract by a record 7.7% in 2020, and that it's going to grow by 6.25% for the year 2021. And the EU economy is forecast to contract by 7.5% in 2020 and grow by 6% in 2021. Another response to this, both the depth of the recession and the strength of the recovery will be uneven. That is certain for now. By acting together in the response to the coronavirus pandemic, we can overcome this crisis and build a common, better future. We'll have to wait and see if that happens. A lot of the recovery for the Europe and the European Union countries lie in the vaccination campaigns, which has been slow. Big EU countries like France, Germany, and Italy have administered at least one vaccination shot to less than 10% of their population. Some EU countries have begun to apply stimulus measures, as was evident in one of these tweets, in order to keep their economies afloat.
Outbreak is having a negative impact on the global economy.
European countries feeling the economic decimation, some more than others.
There are huge and significant risks to our economic projections, and most notably including with the pace of vaccination. What we know is the faster countries vaccinate and the quicker they can reopen their economy.
First, Italy. Eyes on the ground, Italians queue in silence for a food handout outside of one of Milan's charity. Since coronavirus swept across the country a year ago, the line has grown and grown. Throughout Italy, the number of people in poverty jumped by 1 million in 2020 to 5.6 million, a 15-year high. In Spain, crushed by COVID, small Spanish firms struggle to survive. In France, the voice of despair can be heard in this restaurant owner's voice while glancing at some of the empty tables and chairs in his restaurant. From retail to tourism, France is suffering. This snapshot of economic activity for the month of April and March shows how severe the economy was affected. Double digits, all in the negatives. Perhaps these scenes will become commonplace again, like when the Eurozone debt crisis gripped Europe. Austerity was the buzzword back then, with protests breaking out as a result of wage and budget cuts.
Back with me in the studio is Mick Wallace, member of the European Parliament. Mick Wallace, the EU is at risk of a double-dip recession if it hasn't fallen into one already. Employment and retail numbers, they do remain weak. Meanwhile, the COVID vaccine rollout has been a disaster. It's been suggested that in the first quarter of 2021, we would also see the 19-country bloc's economy contract. Now, is the EU in need of a new round of fiscal stimulus like the U.S., for example?
Yeah, I mean, we have a big problem in Europe in that you take a country like Ireland, right? We can't print money like the US or the UK can, because the ECB calls the shots. We're in the European Union, and they don't want to print money. And the main reason they don't want to print money is because the Germans don't want to print money. And in order to solve these problems or to address some of the challenges of these problems, the Germans have more money than anybody else. People need to understand that the European Union is run by Germany for Germany. And everybody else is secondary. Obviously, France, Holland, Austria, some of the Scandinavians are also important players financially. But Germany is the big dog, and they make most of the big calls.
But you didn't know that about Germany. Anyways, let's see if some of the social media posts actually have a response there to Mick Wallace. This particular one from Rob Kimball. Meanwhile, in the EU, the German government's Council of Economic Advisors expects Europe's largest economy to shrink by roughly 2% in the first quarter of this year, according to Reuters as a source. The next tweet, the UK is already on course for the deepest downturn of any major economy. And as CNN reported, Brexit, a major factor, as the ability to do deep EU, US, and Chinese deals fall apart and 19 EU-CU deals have not rolled over. Global Britain was a soundbite only. Interesting way of characterizing it. Well, if we were to take a look at that, that's probably not something that's going to happen immediately because of the fact that we're looking at EU sanctioning China, for example. And that's the point that I raised earlier in the program. Well, we're going to take a quick break here on Economic Divide, but don't go anywhere as we have plenty more coming up, so stay right where you are. Hello, and welcome to our Info News section. First up, Saudi Aramco. Its profits fell 44% for the year 2020. It attributed the reason to lower oil prices that stemmed from the pandemic cutting into the earnings. And then, get this, even though there was a decrease in earnings, it still pledged to pay $75 billion in dividends. And where did the dividends go to? The Saudi government. Most of it, because it owns 98% of Aramco. Well, it was World Water Day this past week. How do you value water was the title to this story. 844 million people lack basic drinking water access. That's more than one out of every 10 people on the planet. Women and girls spend an estimated 200 million hours hauling water every day. And every day, more than 800 children under the age of 5 die from diarrhea attributed to poor water. Does that answer the question on how we value water? Okay. Next up, the issue of how tax evasion by the rich is still a problem in the U.S., seen in this next headline. This is tax evasion. Richest 1% of U.S. households don't report 21% of their income using complete tax avoidance strategies. That allows them to outmaneuver the federal government. It said we estimate that 36% of federal income taxes unpaid are owed by the top 1%. And on to our final story from the South China Morning Post. Russia-China can reduce sanctions risks by moving away from the U.S. dollar. Now, that should work together to resist American sanctions by becoming more self-reliant in science and technology and thus move away from the U.S. dollar for trade. All right, time now to take a look at our final report, which takes a look at the EU's economic signs since the 2008 world financial crisis, which erupted into the EU debt crisis. Did the EU ever grow out of the crisis, or has it just lingered on until the coronavirus hit, which has now pushed it over the edge?
The EU has been slammed for its handling of the vaccine rollout.
We have to be absolutely clear and stop it. Stop it. With AstraZeneca, with these dirty tricks, we cannot accept it.
This bad performance of AstraZeneca has created a reputational issue for all of us, be it the Commission or the Member States.
There are huge popular waves of Euroscepticism and a lack of trust in national European institutions, and even worse, in its leaders. But the leaders, like the ambitious French President Emmanuel Macron, have made their positions clear. No compromise at the cost of the European ambition, as seen in the EU recovery plan.
Mais ces compromis, je le dis très clairement, ne se feront pas au prix de l'ambition européenne. Pas pour le principe,
mais parce que nous sommes face à une crise qui est inédite sur le plan sanitaire, économique et social. Parce que nos pays en ont besoin et l'unité de l'Europe en a besoin.
Realistically, debt doesn't seem to really be an issue anymore. And the reason why is that we've got into the habit of printing money whenever there's a problem. And we keep printing money. And everybody keeps printing money.
Reactions to the rescue plan have been positive, like in the case of debt-ridden Italy.
Presidente, onorevoli senatrici, onorevoli senatori.
Where the money from the EU recovery plan can or cannot be applied is also one mired in controversy. COVID-19 may have affected many industries like tourism, but perhaps the post-COVID period will usher in a new era of economic hope.
Back in the studio with Mick Wallace, member of the European Parliament. Mick, our final question to you. The 2008 financial crisis resulted in the Eurozone debt crisis of over 1 trillion euros that was needed in bailout funds. Top countries like Greece, France, Italy, and Spain, they accrued massive debts. These countries are still the highest risk countries, even before the pandemic hit. Why were they not able to make the strides necessary to improve economically, do you think? And now they are facing a more severe downturn due to the pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, political philosophies vary. And in my opinion, the European Union made a huge mistake in how it dealt with the banking crisis. This was a crisis that was created by nobody else but the financial institutions. And the financial institutions did not suffer from the crisis. They were bailed out, they came out of it fine, and they're all doing grand, thank you very much. But lots of people have suffered dramatically from it and haven't recovered from it. Those countries were amalgamated into the European Union overnight. There was two guiding principles that made that happen. Number one, they wanted a cheap pool of labour from Eastern Europe to be able to supply mainly seasonal work and menial labour tasks in Western developed Europe. Number two, they wanted many of those countries, especially those that were close to the Russian border, they wanted to get them into NATO.
All right. We want to thank Mick Wallace, European Parliament member, for his thoughts here. It's time now for an in-depth section. It's actually a good time to go back to when the Eurozone debt crisis broke out and what it was. Well, amid the 2008 financial crisis, many Eurozone countries were unable to control their debts due to exposure to the banks. And this became known as the Eurozone debt crisis. Many countries needed bailouts, countries like Greece, Ireland, Spain, and Portugal. The EU and the IMF agreed to a 750 billion euro, or $1 trillion, for these crisis-hit Eurozone countries. Now, fast forward to the year 2020. How did the $1 trillion bailout actually fare out? Well, the ratio of government debt to GDP, as you can see here, was 176.6%. That really put into question why the bailout didn't help, or worse yet, where the money went. And here we are, the year 2021. Europe is in the throes of a COVID-19 pandemic, the third to have hit. And we're seeing a repeat of another bailout. The figure? Did I hear $1 trillion? $2 trillion? No, the amount, $2.2 trillion or 1.85 trillion euros, backed by a joint debt. Now here, the country is getting the first batch of the bailout money. You can see Italy, Spain, and France with the various amounts. And finally, the big question is whether this huge bailout money will work or not. Well, let's take a look at the map of Europe. That's color-coded over here. The countries in green have national debts below 100 billion euros, yellow to be below 1 trillion euros, and the ones in red above 1 trillion euros. So there you can see whether this actually worked or not. In closing, I could talk about how badly some EU countries are doing economically and how the EU and the ECB, the European Central Bank, will come to the rescue again. I mean, the effort will be made to save these economies. I mean, there can't be any other way, can it? To save the Euro project, that's the goal. One would think the EU would do everything it can to not lose any business. Well, if that's the case, then why does it go and sanction China? Or why does it sanction Iran or Russia? I mean, in the case of Iran, it could do business with Iran. It could do a lot of business with Iran. It's supposed to do it due to the JCPOA, but it's not. Russia, yes, it does do business with Russia, but it goes ahead and sanctions its officials, including China. Furthermore, talk about Russia. Why doesn't it or didn't it use the Russian Sputnik V vaccine? It's known to be effective. I mean, the rollout in the EU was very slow. The economy could have been rolling right now a lot more than it is. I mean, shouldn't human lives be more important than politics? Well, that does it for this edition of Economic Divide. Thanks so much for tuning in. From Mikhail Tavai, the entire team is goodbye until next week.